¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Stacey Jones, and thank you for supporting our program and keeping it on the air.
So the exorcism gets done, Larry turns around and he does it again. And Jamie's getting more uncomfortable. The show portrays Jamie growling like a cat and all this. That never happened. Mm-hmm. Jamie sat there absolutely furiously stoic with his eyes darting around the room, trying to find something to hurt Father Larry. And John was right there to make sure it didn't happen. And, you know, of course, now I'm still kind of concerned because Jamie's bigger than John, too. And I'm sitting there watching this, and it's going on, and he has just got this cornered panic look on his face, and he's going through this second exorcism. And towards the end of this, you actually saw a black shadow exit out the back of Jamie's head. And it kind of went up the wall, crawled around the wall towards the ceiling, went out to the kitchen, and we all watched it. We just watched this thing kind of leave. It crawled through the walls, went out toward the kitchen, and John went out to the kitchen. I'm still sitting there. John goes out to the kitchen, and all of a sudden, Jamie just kind of like turned, looked around, started crying hysterically and apologizing. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he's just bawling and crying. And he's just absolutely just sobbing. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he's just, I'm thirsty. I'm thirsty. So John comes back with this pitcher of water. Jamie downs the water, you know, more water, more water. And he's just profusely apologizing. And at this point, we're done. Jamie is kind of just mesmerized. And Jamie goes with a child psychologist at this point, and him and the child psychologist take off, and I'm riding with John. And, of course, now I don't understand why I can't be with Jamie. And John's just like, you know, he's not answering questions. It's, let's just calm down right now at this point. So we all met together a little while later. You know, the child psychologist and Jamie came in together, and I came in with John. And Jamie was still apologizing, just apologizing and apologizing. I said, Jamie, what exactly happened? He said, it was like I got my conscience back. He said, at that moment, it was like everything flooded in and I actually got my conscience back. And I understood finally of everything that I had done. It just finally came back to me. So literally the next day we got in the car. And we drove home. We never talked about it again. We just moved on with our lives. And I know that sounds so silly, but it was something that, you know, it was just comfortable for the time. And it was maybe about 6 months later, Jamie had asked to talk to John about what had happened. And I called John up and I said, what do you think? And he said, yeah. And Jamie did not ask specific questions. He just was writing a paper about possession and exorcisms and really didn't ask any questions. So about 3 months after that is when New Dominion Pictures approached me about doing an episode about this. And I had done an episode with them before. And, you know, they approached me and said, you know, what do you feel about doing this? And I said, well, this is something I'd like to talk to Jamie about, you know. he needs to come up with the right answer before I agreed to this. And the only reason why I wanted to do it was because I wanted this to be a cautionary tale to every ghost hunter out there that you don't bring your kids on a ghost hunt. Mm-hmm. That was the reasoning why I wanted to do this. So I picked Jamie up from school, and, you know, he's now 15, and he's, you know, been about a year past, you know, this has all happened. And I said, you know, they kind of want to do an episode about this. What do you think? And he immediately said yes. And I said, okay, tell me your reasonings. And he said, people should know that there's dangers in this. And I said, okay. I said, but you realize you're 15 years old. This is going to come out, and, you know, the kids at school are probably going to just make your life miserable. He said, I don't care. He said, I want people to know. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay. So we agreed, and New Dominion had done some phenomenal, they had a phenomenal researcher. Her name was Lisa Lacera, and this woman spent, I've got to say, at least 2 months very, very thoroughly researching everything that happened. She talked to John. She talked to Jamie for hours. She talked to me for hours. She talked to Father Larry. She, you know, this woman, and she did it all separately. And, you know, she would talk to me, and I'd, you know, fill in my part and everything else. So just before we were ready to film and they were write the episode, she asked both Jamie and I to get on the phone together. And I was on one extension upstairs, and Jamie was downstairs, and she starts bringing up these instances of things that had happened to Jamie that I never knew. And I was so upset because he had held back so much about what had happened during this time. You know, for example, when he fell through that plate glass window, he said what had happened was is that he saw what looked like a black creature had crawled in front of him. And he said he stopped to because this creature was there. And he said it was probably like the size of like a baby bear cub. And he said it was black, and his friend was right there. And this thing crawled in front of him, and he stopped so quickly that he said he literally felt like he had been pushed through this window. And just before he got pushed through this window, he had seen this woman in the reflection of this window. And come to find out, it was the reflection of his great grandmother, my grandmother. And she had died when he was a baby, and, you know, described like jewelry that she wore on a very common basis. And I was, you know, and I said, well, what do you think about that? And he said, I really felt that she kind of caught me as I was going through. So I tracked down his friend, and I was like, dude, tell me what happened that day. And he described it too. He said this black thing, he said it was broad daylight. It was like 3:30 in the afternoon. He said this black thing just kind of slithered or crawled in front of us, and we both stopped and we both saw it. And, you know, he also talked about how he had woke up and seen me hanging from his bedroom in this nightgown that he had picked out, this nightgown that he had gotten for me that he had picked out when he was a baby. And I never knew about that either. And, you know, all these things came out, all these experiences that he was having that I had no clue. So after we'd hung up the phone is really, you know, about a year afterward is the first time that we really honestly talked about what had happened. And I said, you know, what did you feel? What was it like? And he said, it wasn't like I felt it. He said, it just kind of constantly mumbled to me. He said, it was like there was something always mumbling in my ear. And that was the one thing, like his teachers talked about, the principal talked about, that they were getting complaints that Jamie was constantly mumbling all the time, that he would get thrown out of his classrooms for this. And I, you know, he said, I can't describe it any other way. It was just this constant mumbling. So I'm trying to understand what's going on. So I picked up the phone and called Zappas, and I'm like, okay, what exactly are we talking about here? What was this? You know, and he described it as an attachment, that it really wasn't a possession. It was just something that attached itself to him. And it took me quite a while to kind of understand what that meant. And you know, the episode came on. We watched it. You know, I invited a whole bunch of people over. Jamie watched it. I watched this show. I watched the show, and I said, "Oh my God, those poor people!" You know, it was just so over dramatized, but the facts were real. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that dramatic. It was just, you know, it was what it was. You know, it just, we kind of moved on with our lives and everything else. And that came out when Jamie was about 16. And, you know, once again, Ted got crucified in school. A substitute teacher put the episode on one time right in the classroom. Jamie got up and he walked out and called me and said, "Come get me." You know, principal's losing his mind. And I said, "Look," I said, "why is the substitute doing her job except putting this on to humiliate my kid?" You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, poor Jamie really, really did put up with some crap during school. But, you know, once again, it was worth it. We got hate mail. You know, people from around the country just wrote us hate mail, wrote him hate mail, you know, and I just never understood how people are really going to take anything into context from a 40-minute TV show.
Sure.
You know, sure. So much happened. I mean, this was, you know, a 6-month period here. This didn't happen within a couple weeks. This was a 6-month period. But, you know, people, this is entertainment. They had to do what they had to do to get the story out. And I agreed to it because I wanted the story out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted people to understand, you know, dudes, just think about it before you take your kids on a ghost hunt.
Prior.
So I did get a lot of, not a lot, but I did get some email from paranormal investigators, for, you know, saying I stopped taking my kids, which is the greatest thing in the entire universe. That to me was the, you know, if it could be my cautionary tale and one person stopped doing it, yes, thank you.
Yeah. Prior to the exorcism itself, had you had any conversations with Jamie or anyone you know, involving him regarding what others suspected or you may have suspected had been going on with him, that there was in fact some sort of attachment? I know you were kind of on the fence there, even going into the actual exorcism itself, but had that even been brought up in conversation ever of maybe there's something going on here beyond you?
Zaphis was.
Okay.
Zaphis was the one that really was like, you know, you need Stace, you know, because John had known Jamie since he was a little boy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, John was a member of our family. You know, John wasn't sure. Just John Zaphis. He was, you know, yeah. John. And, you know, he understood and knew that this so much wasn't Jamie and me. I'm trying to, you know, just explain it away. And John was the one that was constantly, you know, he needs an exorcism. And I kept fighting it. I kept fighting it. You know, and
what
I'm talking to his psychologist at the same time because, you know, she's a psychologist. I'm like, you know, this is awfully, all of a sudden, why all of a sudden is this kid acting out the way he is? So she's trying to figure it out on her point, you know? But as far as it being paranormal, the only person I talked to about it was John.
Sure.
I fought him tooth and nail on it.
What was Jamie's take on it when John would talk to him about this and prior to the exorcism of making this suggestion of maybe something needs to be done here? What was Jamie's attitude towards that when John was expressing
his
concerns?
He did not know. No, we kept that from Jamie.
Okay.
This was private conversations between John and I because I honestly thought that if it found out that what we were planning, that it was just going to ramp it up for Jamie and ramp it up for the household, because that was my gut on this. I just was like, you know what? If we acknowledge it, it's just going to get worse. That was my, and even on a psychological viewpoint, you know, like, you know, once again, I was still on the fence about it. And I'm like, well, if I turn around and tell this 14-year-old kid who's being a jerk that I think it's paranormal, this kid's going to ramp it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it was kind of like this double-edged sword of, well, if it's paranormal and I say something, it might ramp up. If it's Jamie being a jerk and being a teenager, it might ramp itself up. So I figured that it was going to be best just to keep it secret. And that's the reason why I downplayed everything that this kid kept telling, because I just thought, if I give this kid just a little bit of rope on this, he is just going to take it and run.
Mm-hmm. What was Jamie's counselor's takes on the idea of having an exorcism?
She did not know. Okay. I did not tell her.
Okay.
And that I told no one. I did not tell anybody. I didn't even tell my husband. I told my husband. I said, "Yep, John's filming a TV show. Jamie and I are going to go down and watch." That's what I told him.
Okay.
Because I just, you know, once again, it was that I think less people know, the better. I think the better the outcome's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, I actually did not tell anybody. I only told my husband only when we started filming, just before the date we started filming, that Jamie had an exorcism. I didn't tell him before that. I didn't even tell, like, my immediate family. They found out the day that the episode aired.
Retrospectively, and, looking at this whole situation, when you go back to that cemetery investigation that you brought him on, is there anything that stands out to you today, now having, you know, some time here to think about it, that was different about that investigation that stood out as, you know, something beyond just other investigations that you had gone on or conducted in the past?
Well, it's interesting is we had been to that cemetery the week before. And we had not had time to review that evidence. You know, that evidence sat on everything. You know, we didn't go through anything. But when we started reviewing the evidence after, you know, before I really kind of realized what was Jamie, is we got some very disturbing EVPs from that cemetery. And I wish I would have listened to it beforehand, because I never would have gone back. We got one EVP of two men talking, and one of them says, "Yo, bitch, get out. The devil practices here." And we just got all these negative EVPs from the cemetery. And if I had known that we'd gotten this kind of negative EVPs, I never would have gone back, and I never certainly would have taken Jamie.
Sure. When
once again, hindsight.
Of course. When he was basically under the control of this, or having the attachment with him, was he aware of his personality change, of the changes that were,
yes,
going on with him?
Yeah. And the way he explained it after the exorcism is, he said, it was like, "I got my conscience back." He said during that time, he had no conscience. That literally, he just, there was never going to be a consequence for anything that he ever did. So, mm-hmm. You know, and that he said it was like somebody just went in and removed that ability of the right or wrong decision. And he said it was just after the second exorcism went through is when he said it was like all of a sudden it was boom, it was there. And during the exorcism, what I found interesting is this is something we didn't talk about for, you know, until a year later, but during the exorcism, he was actually shown these false images, you know, because he started talking about, like, during the exorcism, he was like, well, you know, he said, I hurt her. And I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, the lady that was there, you know, he said, I hurt her, and she was in a corner, and she was crying because I hurt her so bad. And I was like, Jamie, that never happened. And he was like, yes, it did. I saw it. So, you know, it was interesting that it was just kind of this, you know, this. He had a different reality as far as, like, I had a different reality. It was just so different because, you know, it was something that we just didn't talk about. And I wish I could say it was, you know, there was a reasoning behind it, but it just, that's just kind of the way it went,
mm-hmm.
You know? And I, you know, me, I'm all about, you know, okay, let's, even psychologically, if this was a placebo effect, okay, it worked.
Sure.
Jamie's back. He feels like Jamie. You know, I feel comfortable around him now. It's all good. It's good.
All these years later now, after this took place, obviously, he's grown now. How does he look back on this situation?
He's 27 now. What's unfortunate is that he wanted to go to a school in New York City. And when we went down to go visit the college, he kind of turned to look at me and he said, I can't be here because it's so evil. And I said, what, the city? He said, no. He said, No, it's not the city, because, you know, I'm a New York City girl. We used to go to New York City all the time. And he said, no, it's not the city. He said, it's just, it's evil. I can't be here. So from the day that he had the exorcism, he started collecting religious icons. This is something that he did. The first apartment that he ever got, I got a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning with him freaking out. He's 19 at this point, his first apartment. He's about an hour and a half away from me. He's freaking out because underneath the carpet, he found a pentagram, and he's just freaking out. I mean, you know, this changed his life in so many ways. You know, he just absolutely changed his viewpoint on everything. He's 27 now, and he still collects religious icons. You know, that's what he does.
Sure.
You know, wherever he goes, if he finds a religious icon, it goes back and it's stored in his, you know, he lives on his own now. I'm in Florida. He's still in Syracuse, still collects them to this day. We didn't talk about it for a long, long time. Last year, we did have a conversation about it because, you know, it had been more than 10 years since it. And, you know, I kind of broached the subject with him that I thought maybe we should write things down, because after 10 years, you tend to forget things.
Sure.
And we started comparing notes and everything else. And, you know, even now he'll still bring up certain things that I just never heard about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just had a conversation last week, as a matter of fact, about the exorcism and everything else. And I said, here it is, a year later, still haven't started writing. And he said, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I don't know if it's something that he wants to relive. I just, you know, I don't know if the time will come. I don't know if I ever will write it. You know what I'm saying? But
sure.
Yeah, he, you know, at 27, I see that his life has changed completely just because of the incidents. You know, like, he'll walk into places and, you know, I'm talking like physical buildings, even at this age, and he'll turn around and walk out because he says it's like that, it's there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's there, you know? So, yeah, it's very interesting on his point. You know, in retrospect, I don't know if I would have handled it any different. I don't know. You know, I was very educated at that time. You know, I'm not a stupid person. I did a lot of research, you know, I did my things, and I don't know if I would have changed it any different, you know, because I think if I would have told him, hey, dude, I think you need an exorcism, I think it just would have been so much worse for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, so in hindsight, I don't know if there's anything I would change. I don't really know that, you know, I got a lot of blowback from the family, for not sharing it with them, but I just kind of felt that if the more people I bring in the fold, that the worse it was going to be. So I thought, just, I better keep this very tight until we get that solution for him.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Stacey Jones. A big thank you to her for joining us today on The Grave Talks. And thank you for being a gravekeeper, supporting the program, and keeping us on the air. We cannot do it without you.
Raise your hand if you want your nails to look perfect all the time. Me too. I'm Sarah Gibson-Tuttle from Olive & June, and this is exactly why we created the Manny System. We wanted to make it possible for everyone everywhere to give themselves a beautiful manicure at home. With our tools and our long-lasting polish, each manicure with our Manny System comes out to just $2. That's right, $2. No more $30, $40, $50 manis that you get at a salon and they take hours. Now you can paint your nails on your time and love them more than ever. And by the way, when people ask, who did your nails? Where did you get them done? You're going to proudly say, I did them myself. Get 20% off your first Manny System with code DIYNAIL20 at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20. That's code DIYNAIL20 for 20% off at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20.